Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
There's a lot of attention around Sinclair Broadcasting and its conservative bent. This is a company that owns stations all across the country. And last month I reported that the company was mandating its local stations to produce these media bashing promos. There's been a lot of angst in local newsrooms about this. Now we're actually seeing the promos. So I want to show you what they look like. This is a compilation courtesy of Deadspin that's gone viral this weekend. Just a little taste of what these promos look like.
The sharing of biased and false news
has become all too common on social media.
More alarming, some media outlets publish these stories simply aren't true without checking facts first.
Unfortunately, some members of the media use their platforms to push their own personal bias and agenda to control exactly what people think.
And this is extremely dangerous to our democracy.
I think you get the idea there. What's going on? All these anchors and all these markets are required to read this script. It's attacking fake news, but really what it's doing, it's kind of like the Fox Fair and Balance slogan. It's a way of saying, we're fair, everybody else is biased. It's taking a page out of Trump's playbook. And I've been talking to staffers in markets, David, that say they're sickened by this, they're uncomfortable with it. Quote, my staff is up in arms about this. Zerwick, you're in Baltimore. Sinclair is based right up the road. What's your impression?
Brian, I've been reporting this story, as you know, since last summer. My first concern was when they hired Boris Epstein from the Trump White House and made him the chief political analyst, made him a political analyst, and stations were dictated to carry his, what I think of as talking points, almost out of the Trump White House. There's a lot of pushback. Look, I think reporters and anchors, especially when you centralize a message, and this is what's important, Brian, if you are centralizing a political message to however many, more than 200 stations, I think it'll be if they get the FCC approval for this, to 200 stations, you have one of the great political messaging machines in the world. And especially, it's the local people, the people you see at the supermarket in Tulsa, Oklahoma, or your hometown in Wisconsin, Madison, Wisconsin, who are delivering these messages. They're not people from New York or Washington who you can dismiss. Much more powerful. I think Sinclair has the potential for that. And I think in some ways people react to that when they see this. Look, this thing by Deadspin is a really clever piece of editing, but it powerfully states what people have been saying about the danger of centralized messaging if a broadcaster decides it wants to send out political messages that way.
And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop from Washington. I am your host, Mark Levine. I'm back. Happy April, everybody. I am back for the duration of 2018. Those of you who remember me and haven't forgotten me from 2017 know that I go away January, February, and March of each year to serve as a delegate in the Virginia House of Delegates and to do my duties as an elected representative of the people. But I am back now with you. And has anything happened in the last 3 months? Well, let's see. We've got the stock market crashing 700 points. We have our president inviting his boss, Vladimir Putin, to the United States. The Russian dictator made clear that Trump made the proposal. Good thing that Vladimir Putin's telling us about it because he didn't tell Congress or his cabinet or anyone else in his government or any kind of journalist or anything. But his boss, Vladimir Putin, has been invited to the United States to tell us what to do. If you just heard that story from CNN, be thankful that we have some free media still in this country. Not much, because Sinclair Broadcasting is buying up every local station they can to make sure that everyone says the same thing. As I think about where we are in this country, not even a third of the way through the Trump presidency, I can't help thinking of every dystopian vision I've ever read about in any kind of fiction. Dystopia, of course, is the opposite of utopia. In utopia, everything is perfect and wonderful. In dystopia, everything is a big failure. And I think of three great things that I read. Two as a kid, and well, one recently. Actually, as a pretty little kid, I read the book A Wrinkle in Time by Madeline L'Engle. It's, by the way, been made recently into a movie. Haven't seen the movie yet, but I do very much remember the book. Very powerful book. The other one is George Orwell's 1984, which I read in high school. And then the third dystopian vision I was thinking about was The Matrix, a very common and more recent, if you will, dystopian vision. And I'm thinking about each book and what they have in common. In A Wrinkle in Time, the young heroine is taken to the evil planet of Kamazot. And in the evil planet of Kamazot, everybody does everything exactly correctly at the same time. There's a pounding beat, and everything is done to the beat. And all the boys bounce their balls to the beat. And everybody walks in lockstep to the beat. And everybody speaks exactly as everybody else speaks at all time. There is a mind-numbing uniformity. And at one point early on in the book, it's funny, I haven't read the book probably since I was 9 or 10, but I still remember it like it was yesterday. That's the power of good writing. At one point, a young boy bounces his ball out of step with the beat. And I don't remember quite how it is, but he looks very scared, and he's immediately punished. Then there's 1984, of course, the probably greatest dystopian vision ever written in the English language, the story by George Orwell. George Orwell was writing in 1948. 1984 seemed way, way off then. All he did was transpose, actually, the last two digits of the year. Although when you think about it, 1948 to 1984, that's 36 years away from now. It'd be like we talked about 2054. Doesn't that seem far away? Anyway, in 1948, we'd just come out of fighting the Nazis. We were currently in a Cold War with the Soviet Union. And Orwell very thoughtfully and frighteningly talks about, well, fascist, totalitarian, dictatorial, tyrannical societies. And probably the most famous thing I remember from 1984 is the Minute of Hate. Maybe it was 2 minutes. I don't remember exactly. But I do remember that everyone in the city, which I guess was in America, America was in a permanent war with Oceania, I think, and another country, Eurasia, perhaps. Anyway, in the period of hate, a creature would come on the screen, on the movie screen. I believe his name was Goldstein. I think it had a Jewish name, purposely. And everyone in the movie theater would shout hatred at this figure on the screen. They'd scream how horrible and awful and terrible he was, and people would be in these anguished, screaming paroxysms of excitement and frenzy and anger as they all shouted hateful words at what, after all, was just a creature on a screen, but was meant to resemble the enemy, the capital E enemy. In this case, it was a man with a Jewish last name. That would make sense, having just fought a war where tens of millions, hundreds of millions of people were taught that Jews were the enemy, and that was the one to fight against. But the idea was to personify the enemy, and everyone expressed hate. But again, in 1984, as with A Wrinkle in Time, what made that vision so terrifying was that everyone acted in lockstep. Everyone made the scream. And when the hero, or almost sub-hero, because he doesn't quite succeed, at least the young girl in A Wrinkle in Time wins at the end of the day, Winston does not. Winston tries to think differently from the masses. I guess like the little boy who doesn't bounce his ball in A Wrinkle in Time, he tries to think differently. He's re-educated in a very painful way until he loves Big Brother too, until he hates Goldstein as well, until every notion of an independent thought is drummed out of him. That is the terrifying vision of George Orwell. Note the similarity to the terrifying vision of Madeline L'Engle, where everyone acts at once in lockstep without thinking on their own. And then I go to the more modern adaptation, The Matrix. That's a movie that most of us have seen. It was a very popular movie, right? You know, the red pill and the blue pill. The movie where everybody doesn't realize that they're in the Matrix. Most people think that they're in reality, but the reality is that the machines are living off of the humans, and they have created in us these brainwaves, these, dare I say, fake news, these ideas in our minds that all of us believe, and that you have to wrench yourself away from the Matrix. You have to step outside. You have to remove yourself from the conformity and the ease with which everyone accepts everyday life in order to fight back. These three visions have in common the idea that all of us have to step out, step aside, be different. That only by being different can we fight the powers that be, and that conformity punishes us. And indeed, all of the heroes are punished by at least the evil powers that be. Try to enforce them to condemn. Some may succeed, some may not, but they force them to conform, I should say, not condemn. They force them not to hate. The powers that be want them to hate. In the famous scene in Madeleine L'Engle's A Wrinkle in Time, the young heroine realizes that all of this is being forced by some disembodied evil brain. And the evil brain, she realizes, is fomenting hate everywhere it can. But she realizes the way to fight the evil brain is not with hate, but with love. And while she can't love something that evil, she can love her little brother who's been taken over by the evil, powerful, disembodied brain. And by doing that, she defeats it. Yes, it's called it. Winston never does manage to succeed, to escape the hatred. He tries, and he finds that life is much easier when you conform, when you don't step outside of bounds, when you just accept what you've been told. And in The Matrix, well, you know, they fight, and there's long series and Matrix 2, but again, it's easier to conform. And the reason I'm telling you all this, you've probably figured it out, is because I wax philosophical, perhaps, when I'm gone for 4 months, but 3 months, I guess. It seems to me that you have a choice. You can be with Trump, or you can be with the resistance. You can close your eyes and accept the words of Fox News, or even more scary, because at least most people know who Fox News is, the words of Sinclair Broadcasting, your local newscaster. Who seems more reliable than your local newscaster? I mean, after all, we know their names, right? When Jim and Grace come on the air, I'm just picking two names, on Channel 4 or Channel 7 or Channel 6, they're talking about us, right? They give the weather in our locality. They say what's going on around town. They might mention some local news, some crime. Who would think that they are actually mouthing the words of an international conglomerate designed to help Donald Trump take over our minds? Now, I know what you're thinking. The disembodied brain in It, Big Brother, and George Orwell, the people behind The Matrix, these are brilliant beings. Donald Trump's an idiot. Who could possibly believe his nonsense? I mean, the guy doesn't even know how to be evil. He's not smart enough. Richard Nixon had the decency to be smart enough to try to trick us. Donald Trump doesn't try to trick us at all. He says one thing one day, he says the opposite thing the next day. Even he doesn't believe his own lies because he doesn't know whether what's a lie or what's a truth. He's like a three-year-old in that regard. How dangerous can he be? So granted, Donald Trump is no Hitler. He's more like Mussolini, or for that matter, Saddam Hussein. Remember Saddam Hussein? Remember his two sons, Uday and Qusay, who apparently thought he could do no wrong? Do they remind you of Trump Jr. And Eric? They kind of remind me. And if you will, Fox News or Sinclair Broadcasting is Baghdad Bob, right? Says things so ridiculous, so clearly false, that only an idiot could believe them. And yet... these are the people that are controlling the minds of maybe a third of the country. We are at a crossroads in America. We're at a fight. Our founders designed a system of checks and balances on purpose so that no human being would be above the law, so that for all its flaws, we would have the legislature jealously watching its prerogative and the judiciary watching its and overlooking the executive branch. We'd have states that would be, as Jefferson called them, laboratories of democracy, and they would provide some semblance of freedom while when the national government was corrupt. I would argue that America has been tested, is being tested right now at no time that it's been tested since the Civil War. We have not just a buffoon as president, not just an ignoramus, but someone who is corrupt and openly corrupt. And where you come down on his open corruption, where you come down on his narcissistic need for approval and the fact that he's willing to throw all the United States of America under the bus to try to make himself look good, not even in a smart way, but in a childish way. Where you come down right now on the Trump side or the resistance side, I think says everything about your character. When we come back, I want to talk about these other moments that you find in American history, whether it's McCarthyism or the Civil Rights era or Richard Nixon's era, when people had to actually go against their own parties in order to stand up for America's freedom. We are truly at a crossroads. America v. Trump. Which side are you on, and what are you doing to save your country from this disaster? This is Mark Levine. The phone number is 888-653-7543. Right back after this. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. As you heard part of that broadcast, and by the way, it's really chilling to watch it. Talk about Orwellian. You can find it at deadspin.com. Watch some, what is it? I've lost count. 50 different stations. All have their local news anchors, you know, the ones you know on Channel 9, the ones who give you the weather and do those funny little stories on St. Patrick's Day, the ones who give you the local crime report and tell you, you know, local news, kind of trustworthy types, all of them intoning in kind. Okay, they don't talk like that, but they are all reading the same script. The same script from Sinclair Broadcasting, a right-wing evangelical theological. Remember, these people support a theocracy. Theocratic organization looking to control your minds. Isn't that nice? Now, we just talked about George Orwell and 1984 and A Wrinkle in Time and The Matrix and how dangerous it is to have every news source tell you the same thing. No doubt you who have found Progressive Voices or The Inside Scoop or iHeartRadio, wherever you're listening to me, like an independent voice. But did you know, for example, that 95% of talk radio is right-wing, conservative, controlled by these same types? Sinclair owns radio stations too, by the way. In fact, I'll tell you a story about Sinclair, a personal story. I don't share it often, but it's worthy of note. I was in radio just 1 year. It's back in 2004. I've been in radio now, by the way, for, wow, a long time. I started in the summer of 03, so I'm going on to my 15th year. This June, I should do something for my 15th anniversary on radio. I've been in radio a long time. And apparently, they thought I was pretty good because a year into my first radio gig, I got approached by some executives from a company I'd never heard of before. It was called Sinclair Broadcasting. They told me, Mark, you know, we think you're really good. You're a new voice on radio. You're lively. You're intellectual. You bring in literary allusions. Who, me? And, you know, you've got all this experience. You used to work in Congress and stuff. We'd love to have you on air. We can give you about a couple hundred stations. And we'd like you to be part of our network. And they offered me a nice salary to boot. And my eyes started shining. I couldn't believe this was happening. I didn't think I'd get this far 1 year into radio. And I'm like, wow, oh, so tell me about your company. Well, Sinclair Broadcasting is privately owned. We've got, they didn't tell me at the time it was an evangelical right-wing station. And they said, you know, we've got hundreds of stations. By the way, Hugh Hewitt came out of Salem Broadcasting. This is just Salem. Wait a minute, this is Salem. I take it back. Salem, not Sinclair. Ah, oh, well, they're similar. It's a right-wing evangelical outfit. I'm not sure if there's a connection between the two, but if I misstated it, I apologize. It may be a separate right-wing evangelical network. It was Salem, now that I've refreshed my memory. But anyway, Salem came to me and said, there's only one thing, Mark. I'm like, sure, what? You know, you want me to change the time? You want me to go, you know, 2 hours rather than 1 or 3 hours? You want me to do more call-ins or less? I was ready to please. They said one thing. You criticized George Bush a lot on your show. And I laughed. This was actually a personal meeting after a radio show. So I laughed in the guy's face. I said, yeah, yeah, I sure do. And the guy said to me, I wonder if you could do that less. Just don't criticize the do your shtick, but he didn't say shtick, but do your thing. Just don't criticize the president. And I laughed louder. Anyone who had heard me in 2004 knew I was not a fan of George W. Bush. I criticized him a lot. So I said, that's really funny. And he didn't laugh. And I still remember his face, dead serious. He's like, no, Mark, we think you're good. We can't have people criticize the president. This is a Christian broadcasting network, and we don't criticize the president.
What?
And I remember, yeah, being in stunned silence. Again, I sort of tried to giggle, but I saw he was serious, and my laugh fell flat. I was like, really? And I just stared at him. And he said, yeah, I know you're a liberal. I know you're a liberal. Just hide that. And we think you're a talented radio host. We think you got a good patter on the air. You know, just hide the fact that you're a liberal and don't criticize Bush and, you know, maybe criticize the Democrats. And I was like, you don't understand me at all. They said, yeah, we know you work for Barney Frank. Actually, that's good. Tell them you work for Barney Frank, but then don't criticize Bush. That'll actually lend more credibility to what we're trying to do. And I was like, wait, so you want me to say that I used to work for Barney Frank, but now I agree with George Bush? And they said, well, something like that. We're not putting words in your mouth, but you just did put words in my mouth. You told me not to criticize the president. Yeah, we just don't do that at Salem. But here's my card, and if you're interested, if you ever change your mind, let me know. That was my rude awakening to radio almost 15 years ago, 14 years ago. And that is what many, many, many radio hosts are told in the post-Rush Limbaugh era. Hannity began on radio, and Bill O'Reilly began on radio. And I never sold my soul. Frankly, I couldn't. You see, I didn't go into radio to go into radio. I didn't go into radio to do promos or make a lot of money. Sure, I'd like to be on a lot of stations, but that's not why I went on talk radio. I went on talk radio because I had the inside scoop, because I had just worked in the federal government, because I knew things the federal government was getting wrong in the executive branch, the legislative branch, and judicial branch. And I wanted to let people know the inside scoop. The inside scoop on what's going on in Washington, how Washington really worked. I wanted them to know. And, yeah, I would talk occasionally about things I disagree with the Democrats. But I am a Democrat. I mean, the first thing I worked on in Congress was a bill that the Republicans had to make sure that the government could not negotiate better Medicare prices. It was the government. It was the Republican insistent that the American consumer had to suffer so that Big Pharma would make a lot of money. And even though every other country, at least every other industrialized country on the planet, did negotiate the best prices for their citizens, Canada did, and, you know, the UK and France and Japan and Australia and Germany and Costa Rica, that we couldn't because, well, corporate profits means more to us than our own constituents. And I remember at that time actually being surprised. They've ceased to surprise me, but at that time actually being surprised that members of Congress would actively harm their own constituents in order to get big donations from big pharmaceutical companies. And then I realized the vast majority of Republicans work for the money, not for their constituents. They work in order to get big campaign donations. Now, some of them are true believers, but not that many. And if you really wonder whether people are true believers or not, and I've always been a true believer, that's why I rejected that wonderful Salem Broadcasting deal. Though something makes me think I should have accepted it, been on air a week, condemned Bush, and gotten kicked out. If I thought about it better, that would have been the better way to go. I would have gotten better press that way. But the reason why you know Republicans aren't true believers is the fact, ask what they believe in. What do conservatives believe in? Do they believe in a lower debt? No. No, they only believe in a lower debt when Democrats are president. Right? Donald Trump and the Republican Congress just passed a $2.5 trillion debt, and none of it, excuse me, very little of it, are you going to see. You might get a couple crumbs off the table. You might get $40 a year, while multimillionaires get hundreds of thousands of dollars, and billionaires, and multinational corporations. Why should it only go to Americans, right? America first, but not when it comes to American tax money. That's going to go to some Saudi Arabian prince who's got a lot of stock assets. So it's not the deficit they care about. Well, maybe it's the free market. No. Donald Trump attacks the free market. He's just busy attacking Amazon. Not because of Amazon's products. You can make an argument about monopolies with Amazon. I mean, Amazon isn't perfect. No, he's attacking Amazon because Jeff Bezos, the owner of Amazon, the CEO of Amazon, owns the Washington Post, which does really good investigative journalism and finds the truth about all of Trump's corruption. Or a good deal of it. He dramatically opposes the AT&T Time Warner merger. Okay, that I can see there are antitrust reasons for that. But Sinclair Broadcasting wants a merger. They only own 50 media companies where they force people against their will and on pain of being fired to say fake news. But they want to do a merger and, well, Donald Trump likes them. If you think it's about antitrust, that's actually a fair criticism of Sinclair or AT&T or Amazon, for that matter. But ask Donald Trump who's in charge of antitrust at the Justice Department. And if he knows who it is, I'll wear a Make America Great Again hat. Because he doesn't know who it is. He doesn't know who anyone is. He goes through his government like so many musical chairs. I don't know about you, but myself and a number of friends, we've created our own March Madness bracket. It's now April. But it includes all the members of the Donald Trump cabinet as they're knocked out one by one by one. The last two in my bracket in the finals are Melania and Ivanka. And Melania leaves him. And he's left with Ivanka. I want you to just try to remember, as we live in this dystopia, try to remember life before the Matrix. Try to remember life before Big Brother. Try to remember life before Trump. Remember under Obama, where if President Obama, I don't know, gave a fist bump to his wife, he was called a terrorist? And now we have a president who is busy accepting hundreds of millions of dollars, we don't know how much, from foreign entities? We do know this. A local court has ruled that the Emoluments Clause of the Constitution of the United States can be enforced. You know what that clause is, right? That's the clause in the Constitution that says that you can't take money, if you're an office holder of the federal government, from foreign sources. And it particularly applies to the President of the United States, who we know is doing business in foreign countries and is also making money from foreign people who are giving tons of money to him through the Trump Hotel, some would call it bribery, in order to get special favors as the stock market collapses further. There's so much in this administration that is so hard to believe that a lot of people just turn off. They turn away. They turn off the TV set. They can't handle it. And indeed, that is how a lot of people confront totalitarianism. How do you think they survive in North Korea, or Russia, for that matter, or in Iraq under Saddam Hussein? Very few people go to the front. Very few people resist. Resistance is futile, some totalitarians would say. It's easier for the brain to just turn off the TV set. to just hide from the truth. And that's why I am so proud of my fellow Americans. The people I saw a year ago come out for the Women's March, the people I saw 2 weeks ago in Washington, D.C. fill the streets to fight gun violence. I'm proud of the resistance. At the end of the day, when we have a corrupt executive, a corrupt legislature, a judiciary that Donald Trump is corrupting day by day by day as he appoints judges who know nothing about the law. Did you see that judge who had never tried a trial, a federal trial, a state trial, a jury trial, a court trial in his life, didn't know basic legal concepts like motion in limine that you can't pass law school without knowing. That's how you keep something, you do a motion about something, about whether it's going to go into evidence or not. Basic legal stuff, and they were just, no, we follow Trump's orders. The only way to stop that is to get a Democratic Senate. At a time when everything is collapsing around us, I need you. I need your help. Your country needs your help. Uncle Sam wants you. Not to join the military, but to join the Civil Defense Force. The defense force where when the Russians are plying our social media, you call it out and says, no, that's wrong. The person who goes to Uncle Joe, we know Uncle Joe, he's a little bit racist and he's never really liked the immigrants very much. But we need to let Uncle Joe know how dangerous it is to have a Russian dictator control our president. When will the Republicans stand up against Donald Trump? Have you noticed how few they are and who they are? John McCain has stood up and sometimes against Donald Trump. Good for him. John McCain is dying of brain cancer and of a brain tumor, and he's not running for re-election. Jeff Flake, Arizona Senator, Republican, very much a Republican who cares about the national debt. He stood up against Donald Trump. He's not running for re-election. Bob Corker, very mild-mannered, typical conservative senator from Tennessee. He stood up to Donald Trump, and he's not running for re-election. Do you see a pattern here? When we come back, I want to talk about times in history when people have stood up to corruption and wrongness in their own parties and wonder with you, will the Republicans ever have the courage to put their country over their power structure? 888-653-7543. 888-653-7543. We'll be right back, right after this.
Never confuse Mark Levin with right-winger Mark Levin. The second E stands for empathy, which the other Mark lacks. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
Welcome back to The Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levin, talking about really the war that we're in, war against everything we believe in. Am I exaggerating? Well, imagine a Hollywood play where you had someone running for president, Hollywood movie, I should say, or a Broadway play, where someone's running for president and they don't want to be president. They just want to increase the amount going to their business. And so they run for president as a lark, really, just to make more money. And they have a long history of petty corruption. They're kind of a petty dictator in their own way. It's a petty mafia boss, I guess. And then a foreign power comes in and rigs our election and gets involved and puts bots on social media and a whole bunch of sheeple vote for him. And then we have an FBI director who in his own power-hungry moment decides to make up something severe against the other candidate, and lo and behold, the incompetent wins, supported by, well, the people who control him, the people on Fox News who tell him what to say. You know that the reason why Donald Trump today said, sorry, dreamers, sorry, DACA recipients, sorry, people who came here when they were 2 years old and have known no other country but ours through no fault of their own, I'm just going to be cruel to all of you. Doesn't matter whether you served your country as veterans or whatever. Screw you. Doesn't matter that Trump's own wife violated immigration laws. Why? Because Fox told me to. That's why. So you have Sinclair Broadcasting controlling its news anchors, and you have Fox controlling the president. By the way, you know what happens if you work for Sinclair and you don't say what they want you to say? Here we go. It's got a contract right here, little copy. You have to pay 40% of your compensation. And then there's all these multiplied percentages. It's complicated. But the heart is, you have to pay tens of thousands of dollars in damages if you refuse to follow Big Brother. I began this program talking about Winston, who refused to hate in 1984, the little boy on Kamazots who didn't bounce his ball in time. Well, journalists, or shall I say pseudo-journalists, you're not a journalist if you're told what to say every day. Pseudo-journalists at Sinclair Broadcasting are required to follow the rules, or they have to pay tens of thousands in damages. Much, I guess, like the various porn stars that Donald Trump sleeps with. You know, at the time of 1984, written in 1948, Pravda and TASS and the Soviet news sources, well, they required this kind of obedience as well, just as RT, Russia Today, does today. Did you ever think it would come to America? My friends, we are the resistance. We are the only thing that's going to save our country. You and me and everyone who still sees truth in a world where Sinclair is preaching conformity. This is Mark Levine. See you Thursday.